Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our May series called Legal Weed. Each week this month, we're hearing from Mark Kleiman about the logistics of introducing legal marijuana at the state level. He's currently advising Washington State on their legalization process after the referendum that launched it last November. And he's also professor of public policy at the UCLA School of Public Affairs and co-author of the book, Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. So far, if you've been listening to this series, we've taken a look at who smokes marijuana demographically and its health effects. And today we're talking about the science behind the drug. So hi, Mark. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Always a pleasure.
And I see you're joining us today from Bogota, Colombia. I understand you're there for the 7th annual conference of the International Society for the Study of Drug Policy. Very exciting. I'm curious, how much interest is there among your colleagues at the conference with these new developments from Washington State and Colorado, legal recreational marijuana in the United States? Are they considering it big news?
They're considering it big news. The very interesting news was 2 days ago. The Assistant Secretary of State for Narcotics and Law Enforcement, Mr. Brownfield, was in Bogota and gave an interview to the local paper, El Tiempo, and he was asked about drug legalization. There's a report coming out on Friday from the Organization of American States, which was told by the heads of government to prepare an options paper on drug policy, and there's been lots of speculation about whether legalization would be among those options. So he was asked about legalization, and he responded that legalizing cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, or synthetic drugs would be a red line that no country wants to cross. Now, what's missing from that list?
Marijuana.
And, you know, if we're a politician saying that, I'd say, okay, he misspoke. He left out a word. But Mr. Brownfield is a very experienced diplomat. I don't think he makes mistakes like that. And so I take that to be a very, very substantial nod and wink and extremely big news.
So this debate will be taking place hemisphere-wide, it sounds like. All right, let's get to the science of marijuana. We've touched on this briefly before in the series, but remind us, because you've spoken about the different chemicals in pot that get you high, and there are different ones that produce different kinds of highs. And I know this is an issue in Washington State. So just remind us very, very briefly what they are.
Well, 20 years ago, if you'd looked it up in the textbook, you'd discovered that the active agent in cannabis is delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC for short, just the way alcohol is the active agent in beer. And that turns out to be a half-truth. THC is the element that gets you high, but there are at least 40 other chemicals, probably more than that, that have some effect. The ones we know about to some degree are cannabidiol and cannabinol. So those are CBD and CBN if you're keeping score at home. But there are also many other cannabinoids, and then there are a class of chemicals called terpenoids, which create most of the flavor and odor. And lots of people think that those are also important in modulating psychoactivity. So all of this is interesting and stuff that ought to be known to consumers. And we sat down to try to figure out how the board could require labeling to give consumers accurate information about what they were taking and what was likely to happen as a result. And the simple-minded story is the more cannabidiol compared to THC, the less likely you are to have a very bad event. Cannabis in big doses can produce panic attacks, anxiety, dysphoria. About 50,000 people a year wind up in the emergency room after using cannabis. And there's evidence that cannabidiol buffers all of those effects. So that it has anti-anxiety and even antipsychotic properties.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked like the ratio was a big deal. And I was all hot to write that down as something that was on the label. And then the folks on our team who were actual scientists said, no, not so fast. We don't actually have much data on any of that. And nobody can really say which of the elements in cannabis smoke have what effects, and it's probably not a linear thing. Right? The importance of the CBD may depend on how much of one of the terpenoids is there. And in fact, nobody knows. And what's frustrating is that under U.S. law, nobody can find out. Because though any 15-year-old kid has perfectly good access to very potent pot, researchers don't. There's only one place in the U.S. that's allowed to produce cannabis for research, and it doesn't produce anything like the stuff that's now available for sale in Washington and California.
So, because
researchers can't do research on the stuff that people are actually smoking.
Listeners, any questions for drug policy expert Mark Kleiman about the science of marijuana? Anything you've always wanted to know but had no marijuana expert, official marijuana expert, at hand to ask? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, on the science of marijuana. Do dispensaries for medical marijuana, which is the legal weed that's been sold to date, ever label the THC and the CBD, the cannabinoids, cannabidiol content of what they sell, the way that distillers need to include the proof on liquors, especially if THC is said to raise the risk of anxiety and CBD is said to lower it, even if that can't be proven? Is that a labeling process that takes place?
It does take place in many of the access points, as they're called. They're not technically dispensaries, but they're fairly standard labels with long lists of active agents. There's something called CBG, which I'd never even heard of, which turns out to be, you know, on the label of many of these. A lot of the labels record the cannabidiol content as too low to measure, and that's characteristic of contemporary connoisseur pot. Lots of THC and almost no cannabidiol. The ratios can run as high as 200 to 1. There's stuff on the labels. Whether the stuff is accurate or not is a different question. When you go to the different testing labs, every testing lab I've talked to says, well, look, we do an honest job, but all of our competitors cheat by boosting the THC content because that's what the growers that are paying us to test their stuff think the consumers want.
Right.
And I heard a very sad story in Washington. There was a locally fashionable variety of pot called Purple Urkel, which a lot of people liked, and it was flying off the shelves, and the guy who grew it was growing nothing else and having a good time. And then the fashion for testing came in, and he sent his stuff to a lab, and it came back 7% THC. At which point, even the people who'd been asking for it by name because they liked its effect so much stopped buying it because nobody wanted to be the person buying the wimpy pot. So the market at the moment has the impression that potency and quality are the same thing. The more THC, the better. And one of the things that the liquor board has to consider is whether there's anything they can do on a regulatory level that will discourage that. It's not an easy problem, but I think it's one worth throwing out because I think the evidence that very pure THC pot is more dangerous than stuff with a mix of things in it, I think that evidence is strong enough to go with.
Interesting. And so I think you're making news here, and I'll just clarify this with you, and then we'll take some phone calls on the science. This Liquor Control Board, and it's funny that legal marijuana is being administered by the Liquor Control Board in Washington State, but I guess that's what it is. And they're going to be releasing a draft of the rules for the state this afternoon. So are you telling us that these rules will not require labeling to indicate the THC and CBD content of legal marijuana, even though we anticipated that those labels might be required?
No, I am not saying that. I'm not in a position to say what's going to be in the draft. I haven't seen the very current draft. But I would be very surprised if there weren't a testing and labeling requirement. That's certainly been part of the conversation. The question is, can you put on the label or on a website scientific information that will help people interpret the label? And that's where you're up against the fact that scientists can't tell us what it means to have something that's got a higher amount of CBG and less CBN. You know, it's stuff that Pillsbury knows about different varieties of brownie mix that the federal government won't let us find out about different varieties of cannabis. So I'm talking with some of my friends in the advocacy community and saying, look, guys, you put up a lot of money to finance these initiative campaigns. How about putting a little bit of money into science in Israel or the UK or the Netherlands or someplace where you're allowed to do it? And let's get a whole bunch of experienced but not habituated cannabis users and let them sample 50 different products with 50 different profiles and be able to write down what happened.
Actually learn something. All right. On the actually science of marijuana, George in Bay Ridge, you're on WNYC with Mark Kleiman. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've heard about like health benefits of vaporizers. I mean, is this accurate, and how does it work?
Is the science of getting high using a vaporizer different than the science of getting high if you smoke or if you eat marijuana? And for people who haven't heard of vaporizers, and I know they're becoming popular, and I know you said, you predicted on our show last week that 10 years from now, nobody will smoke. Everybody will use a vaporizer. So what is it, and what does it do to the science?
If I was being prudent, I would have said 20 years, but so a vaporizer is a device that instead of vaporizing the chemicals that people want to breathe in by burning the plant matrix, they use the plant as the heat source, provides external heat, for example, with a battery and electric resistance circuit, like a hot water heater. And so people put some of the material in a chamber and flip a switch, or someone breathing in triggers the switch. The heat gets turned on. The material gets heated up, and therefore the vapors come off, and people breathe it in. So you're now breathing vapor and not smoke. That's the principle of it. If it works that way, it's almost certainly healthier not to breathe smoke. I'm told by people who know more about this than I do that most of the vaporizers in the market today use such high heat that they're actually combusting the product rather than merely vaporizing it. It's certainly a rising share of the market, and I was shown in the medical outlets in Seattle a number of very clever looking vaporizing devices. One of which sort of looked like an old fashioned cigarette holder.
All right, we have a few minutes. Let's see.
Does seem to be coming in.
Let's see how many more science questions we can get to on the phones. Michael in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
I was wondering what the difference was exactly on a scientific, botanical, and psychotropic level between indica and sativa.
Are those both synthetic forms of marijuana, Mark?
No, those are two. Well, if you say cannabis indica and cannabis sativa, you're using standard taxonomy, you're suggesting they're two different species of the genus cannabis. I don't think the botanists quite believe that, but there certainly are two different versions of the plant, and then there are hybrids. So when you go into the stores, they tend to label stuff as sativa or indica or hybrid. And there are beliefs about the different contents of those products and their different psychoactivity, and how much of those beliefs are science, I don't think anybody knows.
Tim and Chelsea.
But certainly on a commercial basis, there are two standard sets of labels that seem to apply to two actually different kinds of plants.
Tim and Chelsea are on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks. I'm curious about the addictive properties of marijuana, and I just wonder if these new hybrids or potencies that are coming up with CBG and CBN and CNN and CBGB, are those enhancing or accelerating the potency of marijuana and thereby increasing their addictive properties?
So there are two questions there, and I can't give a solid answer to either of them. One question is whether increasing potency leads to increasing addictive risk. That might or might not be true. My sense of the addictive risk probably relates more to the variability than to the absolute strength. A related question, different question, is whether the risk of an accident, of an accidental overdose where people feel very bad and have a panic attack, goes up. And there I think the answer is almost certainly yes. It looks as if most of these other chemicals are modulators of the high, not intensifiers of it. So most people I talk to believe that at least some of these other chemicals reduce risk rather than enhancing it. The pure THC product that's on the market orally, Marinol, for medical use, is so unattractive a drug to use that the DEA actually downscheduled it because they thought it was going to be a very abusable drug because it's the most potent possible form of marijuana. It's 100% THC, and it turns out there's no diversion market because people don't like to use it.
Because
so
it doesn't.
I think we have a lot to learn.
Because Marinol doesn't get people high as a side effect?
Oh no, it gets them high, but it gets them panicky and dysphoric at a sufficient rate that people just prefer not to do it.
All right, The Science of Marijuana with Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at the UCLA School of Public Affairs and co-author of Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. And he is consulting the state of Washington as they implement legal marijuana there, as voted on by the people in a referendum last November. And we'll talk to him again next week when we discuss the economics of legal weed. Mark, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.